Hello and welcome to the Celtic Women's Football Show. I'm your host, Claire Wilde, and I'm here back with Lorenzo Pacitti. Hi, Lorenzo. Nice to have you back.
Good evening. Yeah, it's nice to be back. It's nice to be back in the hot seat.
It didn't go unnoticed that the one podcast that you haven't been on for a while was the one where we had to talk about quite a lot of negative stuff.
I don't think those two things are linked, and I think any attempt to link those two things is just a waste of time.
Okay, well, should we just move on from that then?
Well, I mean, to give my five pence, I was in Dublin for work, and I was working during the game, so I was following updates, and I thought, this is going swimmingly, as far as I can tell. It's one of those games, but we've got the goal ahead. And it just felt the optimism of this season was riding us through. And then, you know, Celtic things happened.
Yeah.
And it was very depressing. Watched it back. I think there was a lot to be frustrated with in that second half.
Yeah.
But, you know, this league is just, I mean, for the, you know, neutrals, I guess, or for the TV or getting eyes on it, how close the top three are in the, in terms of how close these games are and how much they're going to take points off each other is crazy. And on the optimistic side, I'm strapping in for excitement.
Okay, good. And also the other positive thing, I think we said this, is that if you're going to learn some of the harsh lessons that we were going to learn, better to learn it at this point in the season and take that and move on into Christmas and the new year than a little bit later in the season when it might be a bit too late to kind of pick things up and do something about it. So anyway, we do move on. We're obviously just coming to the end of an international break. So this week, we are going to do something a little bit different. We haven't really done it before. We have had questions in before, but we're basically doing a whole mailbag episode. So we asked you to get in touch with your questions about the women's team, and you did exactly that. We've had loads of questions. Thank you so much to everyone who took the time and got in touch. So we're just going to crack on and see what you've got to say, and hopefully it will spark some interesting discussions, Lorenzo.
Yes, we'll see what they can throw at us.
What emerges.
I feel like whenever we do ask for questions and stuff, which is good, I think we're all on the same page. When people want to talk about the club, a lot of similar themes come up.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of obvious places we need to move forward. There's a lot of obvious things to improve. So I think it's good to hear, you know, other people like us that follow the women's team. We all have the same impetus. We all have the same things we want to change.
Yeah, definitely. And there are more people now who've kind of been following it for a while. So we're seeing some of those frustrations or, like you say, the similar questions creeping in. I'm going to start with quite a long question, but I am going to read it out in full because this person has taken the time to write it, so I'm going to read it. It's Hamill. It also, like you said, there are a few points. There's probably like three main points in this, some of which are also covered by some of the other questions we've had, because they do tend to, obviously people have asked the same things a little bit. This one goes, hi team, new subscriber, and men's and women's season ticket holder. I was wondering if you feel like the club are doing enough to promote and support the women's team. I was telling the lady who sits beside me at Celtic Park about the women's season ticket and that men's season ticket holders get a discount, and she was amazed. She follows Celtic home and away, hadn't seen anything about women's tickets, prices promoted, or the fact that her and her son could share a single season ticket for the women's game for about £80. We have a captive audience of fans at the stadium, never show any goal highlights, upcoming games, ticket costs on the screens, and not to mention being annexed out in Airdrie away from the home city. Now, that's the point that has come up an awful lot, is Airdrie. I can't believe the club hasn't snapped up Crown Point Sports Centre or planned to build a stand at Barrowfield for the girls. In contrast, Rangers bring their team to Ibrox any time they have a big match against Celtic, Glasgow, Hibs. Just wondering your thoughts on the club relationship with the team and whether or not you feel like me, it's a bit one-sided at the moment, and there's a feeling like the girls have to do more in order for the club to support them further. So I think there's a few things in there, isn't there? There's the promotion of the women's team by the club. There's that point about the new stadium, and then the sort of general support from the club, which I guess we could maybe tie into the promotion issue. But it's really, I think partly the reason I wanted to read that out in full is because just that story about, you know, one story about someone who just goes to games all the time and has like sort of had to seek it out themselves and doesn't like is still finding stuff out about the very basics about having a season ticket and what the season ticket discounts are, etc., etc. Where should we start? Do you think the club does enough to support the women's team? Let's start there.
No, I think that question, particularly from, you know, a new subscriber and somebody who's maybe newer to the women's team, is a great example of all the things that are wrong that link together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like an effort thing from the club. Even we've had these big moments at Celtic Park, like he says in the question, Rangers tend to bring big games that pop up that they can accommodate. They tend to play them at Ibrox. Celtic last season had to, like, you know, be in with a shout of winning the league and, you know, be going for a cup double, and the feeling around the club with Ange and the league season had to be so good and everything had to be amazing and the club could see the opportunity there to make money. That had to all happen for us to have games at Celtic Park. It's not like the support was going to be there anyway. It doesn't feel like games at Celtic Park are a given. It feels like they're a luxury that, like he says, the players have to earn. There has to be some sort of superlative reason that the women are allowed to play at Celtic Park, and not just because there's an international break on for the men or, you know, there's a free week. There's plenty of those times occur, and that's when Rangers seem to do it.
Yeah.
I think the Airdrie thing is always going to be the biggest deal. I know a lot of people who are shocked as well when you tell them, you know, a season ticket for the women's team is only, you know, it's so much cheaper than the men's team, and they would consider it, or the perks are interest. But then you tell them it's in Airdrie, and they go, all right, well, you know, I'm not interested anymore. And the awareness of the club around the men's games, like you said, the lack of highlights, ticket prices, pushing the women's game. We had a real period at the end of last season where it was almost every home game, things like that were happening.
Yes.
You know, the women are involved in Goal of the Month. They would remind you over the tannoy that a women's game was coming up. But again, it seemed to be that special couple months where it seemed like the club were starting to get it. But in reality, it's just, it started to line their pockets for a little bit and they jumped all over it. And it does feel like that's faded because there's bigger issues at play with the men's team right now. I don't know when the women's team will stop feeling like an afterthought. And I do think the closest we'll get to that is when we have a Glasgow base, because then us as fans can take a lot of the legwork and push this team on quite a bit.
Yeah.
Whereas when they're stuck out in Airdrie, we can't really do that. It's really hard for us to be able to get fans to get behind this team when there's so many obstacles to support them. So, yeah, I think all those questions all wrap up into the answer of no. I don't think the club supports the women's team nearly enough. And I think there's some very obvious ways to move forward in that, but I don't feel optimistic about them in the short term.
I think listening to you answer that question as well really highlights for me as it's partly the inconsistency, because we occasionally, like you said, we do see these glimmers of hope and we see these moments where the club really does seem to be pushing it. And, you know, there was a very recent example. They were pushing the tickets for the Glasgow City game, which is next Friday week from tomorrow, on Celtic TV last night. And I did get a message from someone saying, why are they pushing tickets for this on Celtic TV, which no one outside the UK, only people outside the UK can watch? And then was reminded that it was a pay-per-view, so there would be other people watching it. So that was good. And having Fran on the commentary team for that Celtic TV broadcast and stuff. So there are these elements where you sort of, you know, I think we're very demanding as fans, and I think we should stay very demanding. That's not something that we should let slip. And it does mean that sometimes you have to kind of look at it through two lenses, which is one, they are doing something which is better than nothing. And then the other one, which is we just want it to not, like you said, not be an afterthought. And just a bit of consistency, because that's what really builds things. You know, I'm teaching my niece to play the piano at the moment, and I keep like hammering home the fact that I'd rather that she did 15 minutes practice a day than like panic and do like an hour the day before. Do you know what I mean? And it's that kind of got that flavor about it.
I mean, like you say, it's consistency, and right now the club, it almost feels like it's the women's team is being maintained. You know, there's no risk in any kind of investment we do. How much money does this club need to have in its bank account before the women's team goes beyond maintenance and becomes an investment.
Yeah. I think there are some questions.
That's the worry.
Some questions that might bring that up a little bit later as well. And David asked this question as well. It was in Hamill's question as well. I'm just looking as well because there were at least another couple of people. Apologies. Brian mentioned it about the Barrowfield ground thing. I know we've talked about it a number of times on the podcast in passing, but let's just address it specifically in as much as we've had this announcement about the Barrowfield redevelopment. There's been very little kind of follow-up on that and a lack of clarity on. I have asked a couple of people at the club what's going on with that. I haven't had an answer about whether all of this development might include, because it has, there have been noises about it even last season and the season before. And we kind of know that the club are consistently looking for somewhere. And that one of the challenges, of course, is the kind of lack of like options in Glasgow at this point that make realistic sense and that they can make work. So I do understand that there are challenges and that at this point, Airdrie is, you know, it's what we've got. Here's a question that I'm going to add in. Would you have been happier with the stadium at Cumbernauld? What's it called? Where do Rangers play?
Broadwood.
Broadwood, yeah. So, because Broadwood, you know, I don't know.
I probably not. I don't know. I don't feel like Cumbernauld is pretty like that, where Broadwood is. I don't know enough about the public transport there. Mm-hmm. That's a big thing for me. I don't know. I feel like there is a lot to be said about it being Glasgow and it being ideally the East End or somewhere that's kind of walkable in Glasgow. There's a reason Celtic Park is, you know, so great to have as a home ground. And there's a reason people feel that they can get out and support.
Yeah.
And when we do have the women's games at Parkhead, there's a reason people turn up because it's a familiar feeling. And it's, you know, we need somewhere with a bit of permanence. Barrowfield would be the dream for now. Mm-hmm. If, you know, it's upgraded to a particular spec and there's enough seating, you don't want it to become a glorified training pitch. I mean, Rangers, when they played at Murray Park or whatever it's called now, you know, they had a 150, 100 seats maybe max, mm-hmm. and then you could kind of stand about. That felt like you were watching a training session.
Yeah.
It didn't feel proper for a professional, particularly, you know, a league-winning team. And that's obviously why they've made the jump to Broadwood. But I think we need a home. And as much as you can hear, you know, Fran or Kelly talk about trying to make Airdrie their home, it's never going to be good enough for the fans. It's never going to be something that suits us. And my fingers are crossed for Barrowfield that the clubs see the opportunity there. I think that's what always frustrates me as well for a club that's run like a business, and that's fine. You know, the idea that Airdrie's the best solution, it probably is. Monetarily, I don't know. I feel like Airdrie make a fortune out of us, these games, compared to what we probably make. That car park, you know, thief alone with his £3 to £4 it increases to. And obviously the ticketing goes through their website. I don't know what the deal is, but it doesn't seem like that makes a huge amount of financial sense for us. And maybe, again, it's a case of mitigating risk, and it's the least investment. I would like to see the club acknowledge that if we had somewhere at Barrowfield, again, so close to Parkhead, that you could tag team these weekends with games, you could really get people invested, you know, open training sessions, all sorts of stuff could happen. And you want people's eyes to be open to that.
Yeah, I'd love that. I mean, let's just hope and maybe lobby. And if the thing about this as well is that the more people just keep asking the questions and keep putting pressure on the club, like that can only do positive things. It can only result in positive. It might result in nothing, but at least if those voices are being heard, because I think Celtic as a club are just so risk averse, they need to hear people asking for something before they're going to like do it or create it or like put on events or whatever they're going to do. They need to be like almost have a guarantee that there is a market for it rather than the build it we and they will come kind of model. So yeah, I think that's really important to remember. But yes, support from the club in general. I just think that, again, you know, you do sometimes feel like the amount of work that the team puts in themselves to kind of raise their own profile is huge. And sometimes you just feel it's not being matched by the enthusiasm of the club.
No, and I think there's staff whose, you know, jobs are linked to the women's team who do a great job. I mean, I think maybe in recent months or the last kind of start of the season, we've seen the social media be really good.
Yeah.
You know, I think the people who are closest to the team mm-hmm. are doing a good job and are very enthusiastic. And that's great, but it doesn't feel like there's maybe enough people who are dedicated to the women's team. It doesn't feel like there's enough forward thinking in terms of how to get eyes on the game, in terms of what's next. There doesn't seem to be a lot of cohesive planning. Again, it's the transparency. We don't get a lot of transparency as Celtic as a men's team running, obviously, but you kind of appreciate that and understand that because of the size and the scale of the operation, and we all kind of know how football clubs work at mm-hmm. this size. For the women's team, it almost feels, sinister is the wrong word, but the fact that we don't understand where any investment goes because we can't see it.
Yeah.
You know, we're a professional club now, but, you know, we have to, how do we compete at a higher level? Where do we go from here? Where does the money come from? What's next? It doesn't feel like there's any cohesive plan, and we've been very blessed with managers like Fran Alonso and players like Kelly Clark and Keelan mm-hmm. Hayes giving us consistency and giving us a spine and an attachment from the club to the fans. And I think without that, we would just be, I don't know if you take away like the real consistent players of that team, we could just be any random little kind of offshoot of the club. It would feel like a totally different team.
Yeah, totally. Thank you, Hamill, for that question, because it seems to have sparked a lot of discussion. I think
it made me very angry, Hamill.
we're gonna go all over the place because I've kind of got questions on lots of different subjects. Let's talk a little bit about the team this season. We've got some questions. Ryan has asked, what would you say the area the club need to strengthen most? I wonder if he means team.
Mm.
I'm going to make an assumption. Please let us know if we've got this wrong, Ryan. but let's say that what do you think the area that the team needs to strengthen most? I guess we've suffered our first defeat now. After that, I did a sort of rundown. I think I mentioned it in last week's episode of kind of where the squad is, including injuries, including the really young players. We really do have a starting 11. And then a kind of lower tier. And I think, you know, this is something that maybe is being experienced across the club as well in the men's game. But do we have a strong enough squad, and where do you want to see us? We've got a January window coming up.
I think more so than other seasons, or less so than other seasons, there's not as glaringly obvious gaps. I think the squad is quite balanced. I think injuries change that. Like the right wing back position.
Yeah.
That's one for me we haven't solved since Hannah Kerner's been injured. She's the ideal. She slots in there perfectly. But that's a big miss. You know, Lou replacing LAC, Lou's obviously been unbelievable, but she's not quite that role. And it does feel like maybe there's the strength needs to come from the positions maybe being a bit clearer. Or if we're going to play this way, maybe we just need to strengthen literally the top end quality mm-hmm. of the team. We can go up a level. You know, I think the balance is there. If you look across the squad, you'd be pretty happy with the starting 11. We've got a good squad. We've had a good run. But there's maybe a few less players of standout game-winning quality.
Yeah.
In kind of numeracy that there have been in the past. And if, you know, it's that way. People love to do these graphics of, imagine if Lille never sold all their players, here's how good a team they'd have. And it kind of feels like that with when you put some of the stars of the last few weeks, last few seasons in that team. So maybe the improvement would need to come by making whatever you would deem it at this level, some marquee signings or a marquee signing. I think the balance is there. The squad's good. The team's in pretty good shape, even though, as you say, there's quite a clear drop to the bench. But yeah, it's a case of a step on from good SWPL players to, like, you know, players who are too good for the club. we should be saying that more often, you know, about players.
Well, players who, once obviously we've won the league, can take us into some sort of next stage of Champions League, or at least start winning some Champions League games in a different way than we've been able to in the past, would be really nice. I think for me, it's just about the depth. And I think up front, I think we do need a bit more. We do need something else up top. I think that, you know, if you think about last January window was when we brought Kitlofersky in. She's obviously bedded in now and she's fantastic. If she gets injured, then we're going to be in real trouble. Same with Amy Gallagher, who, you know, again, is out and out striker, the best role for her. Should she be a player who's allowed a bit more of a free role, who's a bit more of a number 10? Should we have another out and out striker up top? You go all the way to the back of the team as well. Again, as soon as something happens with one of those players in the back three, everything starts to having to shuggle around. And because that's what Fran's modus operandi is, he doesn't slot players in. He'll go, right, well, you can come over here and you can go back there and we'll just move things around. You know, it all start. You can quite quickly go from having a really solid team that you're very confident in to kind of doing that. Is this okay? Yeah, this will be fine. I mean, they're all good. Kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, injuries are what derail, you know, league campaigns. And right now in the women's game, injuries are what derail the biggest teams on the planet. Uh-huh. And injuries are very common for big players. Bad injuries are worryingly common for big players. So, yeah, I think depth is something that every women's team should be looking at right now, because you could lose your star player. Seemingly right now, the amount of high-profile players that have had year-long injuries. You know, Vivian Miedema just made a return against us. She was out for way over a year.
Yeah, I think 18 months at least.
Yeah, so you're looking at, like you say, you can be happy with the squad, but injuries will happen at smaller levels. You know, bigger injuries will happen. The last couple of years, we've lost some huge players to really bad injuries. We've lost Sarah Harkes. We've lost Hannah Kerner.
Natalie Ross.
LAC right now. Yeah, it's happens. So, yeah, it's about keeping that depth and keeping the quality high. Mm-hmm. And for me, the way we need to be doing that is by going up the way and bringing in players who are a little bit more first team ready.
Yeah.
And when I say first team ready, I mean, you know, nailed on. I don't mean like they can come in and play.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I would totally agree with you. I'm going to move on to another question because it kind of plays into this a little bit. It's from Chris. Our good friend Chris Campbell, thank you very much for the question, Chris. And Chris asks, should Fran play Paolo Partido in every starting 11? I specifically came back to this question because you mentioned right wing back.
Yeah. Right now for me, yeah, I think the best form of defence in terms of our best 11 is attack. And yeah, I think that actually now against anyone, looking at that Rangers game, it felt like we were really missing something. Mm-hmm. On that side. And I think what Partido gives you is evident quality. Yes, she's still a wee bit raw, but as we've said, she's matured almost every game. She can learn that role a little bit better maybe, but I do think we're hamstringing ourselves by not having her in the park for the kind of quality she gives you.
Yeah, I would agree with you completely. I think, like you said, what you say, attack is the best form of defence, that we need to be playing that type of attacking football and pushing forward, and she's the player to do it. I don't think at this stage Barkley is the option, who is kind of at the moment the other option on that side. And I don't know whether you would agree as well that having, because Caitlin plays on the right-hand side of that back three, you've got such a solid, reliable presence in defence there, that you can kind of maybe afford to have someone who's going to be a bit more keen on pushing forward.
Yeah, and we have a really strong back three who don't concede a lot of goals. If you look at the other side of the pitch, there isn't really an expectation of Lou to defend too much. She can get herself back in position, but yeah, she's not a Barkley-type fullback. She's just a left winger. So I don't know why that isn't the case for the right-hand side, because for me, Partido is very much in the same mold as Lou.
You're just making me pine for Hannah Kerner because she could do everything.
This is the thing. I think the conversation is so different if our fullbacks or our left and right wingbacks, whatever they are Hannah Kerner and LAC.
Yeah.
Because then you can really shuffle Lou around further up the park. like you say, it doesn't necessarily mean we have a front two of Amy and Kit. Again, Partido could be a right forward. There's a lot more options there, and that's why injuries do kill you. But in a dream world, for me, you would have your wing backs would be Kerner and LAC.
Okay.
And that kind of solves these issues for me.
I'm realizing as we're going through these questions and I'm looking at the time that we may not get to everyone. And I sincerely apologize if we don't get to your question, but I'm hoping that in the broader discussion, some of these questions do get answered. I am going to stick with Ryan because he did ask two. So lucky you get both your questions asked, Ryan. He asks, who is your most improved player from last year?
I'm loath to say that. Oh no! In fact, change answer completely. It's Kit Lefersky.
Okay.
Make your case. I was going to say, for some reason, I was going to say Amy, not because she's like needs to have improved, but because she's just such like a baller now. You know, she's the focal point of the team. I would kind of say Kit though, just because, like you say, she came in January and she took some bedding in time. And she looked like that kind of raw, super quick, but what else can we get from her? Can she lead the line? Can she be our top scorer? You know, these were all big questions, and she started to answer them at the end of the season in those big games, and you saw that pace could just be totally game-breaking. Mm-hmm. And the way she started this season, she's really added everything, and she seems just like a Fran striker. She's got that movement, she's really intelligent, and she's starting to take a lot more chances. She still misses the odd sitter, but that is to be expected when you play for Celtic. Apparently, that's what our best strikers do. But, you know, she's really, really upped it, I think. And the fact that we have lost who we've lost and we aren't in this season wondering, you know, who's our number nine? Where's our focal point? It's more that you'd rather the depth was there, but we're not concerned about our striking options. And sometimes it's taken till January till, you know, our strikers kind of turned the corner for us.
Yeah.
And started to bang them in. So I would say Kit Lefersky.
I like it. Amy was also on my radar for this question, but just because of the reasons that you said, not that she had a bad season when she first came to us at all, but just the kind of, it just feels like this season she's somehow bedded into the point where she's so comfortable that you just really realize what she's able to do this season.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting question as well, because when you get asked a question like that, you kind of, the ones that stand out are the kind of ones that have jumped ahead or have suddenly made a really big impact. And quite often, of course, those are players who are scoring lots of goals or who are playing up top. I think we've got a lot of players who you can see improvement in season on season as well. And I think that, you know, if you look at a player like, we've loved watching Lou for a long, long time, but she's getting better. I think even Chloe Craig is having an absolutely sensational season. She's been at the club for such a long time, and we're so used to her being there and making her contribution to the team. But I'd say you could make a case for her being an improved player this season.
You could. I mean, it's tough to not make that case when you've got a centre half scoring that many goals. And yeah, we're not conceding much, and she's been great. And it almost feels like every time a new centre half comes in, I guess for the bigger games, the assumption seems to be that it's to replace Chloe Craig, or, you know, Chloe Craig will be the first man out.
Yeah.
When a new centre half comes in, but you feel like you'd be losing so much of your goal threat to take Chloe Craig out that you kind of can't do it.
Yeah. I think as well, the thing to note is, you know, there has been such a lot of turnover that you look at the team and, you know, we're not retaining players season after season after season to see necessarily that improvement. So maybe you see them go off and improve elsewhere. Clarissa Larrazy, for example. I would agree. I think Kit had sort of, in a way, a blessing that she came in at that stage last season. So she had that half a season to kind of find her feet and realize what she was capable of in this team, get used to the coaching, get used to the training, etc. Okay, we will move on. The next questions, which one should we do now? Oh, this is a good one. If you could sign two players from the domestic league for Celtic, who would they be? Caveat is that they have to start most games, and this is from Liam. So thank you, Liam, for this question.
Interesting. I think it would be tough not to want to pinch like Lauren Davidson. You know what I mean?
She's got to be top of the list, right? As soon as I saw that question.
Also, because she's very versatile on that front three, which suits, you know, a France system. She's got the size. She's got like a lot of presence. She's played at international level now.
Mm-hmm.
Seems maybe the obvious one. I would never take a Rangers player. But even if I was going to, it probably would have been like Brogan Hay, who's now gone. So that's fine. My other pick would maybe be Emily Whelan at City.
Okay, interesting.
I really like her every time we play them. I think she's really clever. She's got a lot of dig. Mm-hmm. Reminds me of Cav a wee bit. I think she just makes a lot of really clever passes. I've never seen her make a mistake. Plays for Ireland, you know, international. She's only like very early 20s, if she even is.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be an exciting signing we maybe should have made when City made it. You know, I think she was at Birmingham
mm-hmm.
When they got relegated, and a lot of the players kind of left from there. I think maybe that's somebody we should have had our eye on. But yeah, Emily Whelan really sprung to mind quite fast for me, which surprised me. But I do really think she would fit in with like a Jenny Smith, Cav midfield.
Yeah.
I think that would be a really nice wee trifecta.
That's interesting because I don't feel like I've seen a lot of her this season. And I feel, but you're right. I remember last season being a big, I'm loath to say big fan. But, you know, you get the gist, you know what I mean, of Emily Whelan. So that is an interesting choice. I think my choices would be Lauren Davidson, without a doubt, she goes in. The other name that always comes to mind when we do these kinds of thought experiments, and this one's shout out for you, Christian Wolf, is Georgia Timms from Hearts. Because I think, I'm not sure how much of a good season she's having at Hearts. Hearts obviously haven't kind of kicked on like we thought they might do in the same way that we thought they might do. But I feel like she would be quite a good fit for this team. And I think she could really come on under the coaching of this set of coaching staff. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, no, Timms was in my ballpark as well. I would kind of wonder where, I think she would totally fit in, but where would probably be still up for debate. She, again, is quite a versatile, you know, exciting player. I would like to see where she'd fit in and the impact she'd make, but she's somebody that's dead exciting. And when Hearts got her on a new contract, again, that was a big move. We talked about it. We were kind of like, can we pilfer a few of these players? Is this where we're at? But again, maybe that's to be said about the club. It doesn't feel like we're even at that level yet where we're sweeping up the plankton
and around the league, you know? This, when I was thinking about this question as well, I'm actually just going to chuck my own little extra question in here, which is, if you could have any recent Celtic player who's left but still in the SWPL back, who would you have?
Who's left but still in the SWPL?
So a Celtic player who's still playing in the SWPL but has played for Celtic before. Obviously, Cav's on her third time round.
I mean, McGovern's had a pretty good start.
There we
season.
Go. That was my answer as well. yeah, I mean, who are the options? Because I was thinking it would be nice to have McGovern back. I so enjoyed when she played for Celtic. Obviously, you've got Bowie. You've got Sarah Ewins is back, but we haven't really seen her play. I think she's been injured.
Yeah, of course.
There's it's quite a number. You've got lots of players at Partick Thistle. You've got
Giard.
Josie Giard at Hamilton, you've got Cheryl McCulloch, you've got all that lot. I'm sure there's lots of names that I'm missing. But yeah, it's a good question.
Yeah, it's
anyway, why don't you all write in or text in or whatever you people do and let us know which SWPL players you want to join the Celtic team. I like that question. It's a good one. So let's move on. What have we got? Ken asks, on from last season, what do you both think when Fran changed his team on a week-to-week basis? Not as much this season, but thinks it cost us last week against Rangers. So this, I guess, is a question about Fran and squad rotation, which has been a consistent kind of joke / frustration when we've talked about this. I do think it has settled down a little bit this season. Do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still think, you know, we don't go into these big games with an expectation of the starting 11. I feel like there's always something has changed when we get to, you know, Derby Day.
What is that? It does sometimes feel like, so like for the few games before that Rangers game, we do have quite a steady starting 11. The only changes are because of injuries or whatever has happened, you know, very good reasons, and it's sort of like for like substitutes. And then there's something that tells you that when we go and play Rangers, he's going to do something off the wall, and he kind of delivers most times.
Yeah, that's the thing. Because he delivers most times, I do just think he's a manager who likes to match up with his opposition. And throughout most of the league, that isn't necessarily an issue. We should blow away other teams in the league, and he should be looking to get us, you know, as regimented as possible. And that's why there's been more consistency. Mm-hmm. I do think he has specific plans for the bigger games, and that's why he makes these subs. And I appreciate it. And again, when it works, it's fantastic. Like, even Barkley, hard defence against City, you know, that's not a start I would have made, but that paid off. Mm-hmm. We've seen, you know, even Lou's introduction to the team was off the back of that. It was to kind of attack a certain element in these big games.
Yeah.
So, you know, I never really blame him for it, but sometimes it can be frustrating when it doesn't work, and I probably err more on the side of consistency in terms of what I prefer. I like seeing a strongest 11, and I like seeing it come out in the big games, and I like the momentum that gives you. But it's a common thing a lot of managers do. I mean, Neil Lennon used to jump into a Rangers game, and the most random sub at the very back of the bench would be starting randomly. You know, it's managers love to throw wild cards in for derby games, and Fran is about as wild card a manager as it gets, so at some point you have to respect it.
It's just a bit unsettling, isn't it? It's unsettling for us as fans, it must be quite unsettling for players as well. Or do you think they understand going into these bigger games that something will be afoot and things might be tinkered with a bit?
Yeah, I mean, you see players like Shen is kind of a model of consistency, and she's dropped out of big games and she's come back in randomly in big games. So she's kind of always been at the heart of it for me when I look at a team sheet in a big game. And yeah, I think they're all really pretty used to it. And for the most part, you'll have an impact to make in these games anyway. Mm-hmm. Unless it's that horrible game at Broadwood where he made no subs.
Yeah. Ken's other question is, why can't, or are we, just looking at the phrasing, basically, why aren't we competing with Glasgow City and Rangers when it comes to the big signings? And is it wages and other? And I think this comes down to being a question about this age-old, a lot of these are kind of age-old issues of, we know that we are in the top three, we are third in the pecking order of how much investment is going in to the women's team and to the club, and how much of an impact we actually think that has when, you know, at the end of last season, we reiterated this and we talked about it quite a lot, and we said the fact that we were winning the league until the last 2 minutes of the season was despite the devastation, it was an incredible achievement given the fact that the resources allocated are known to be a lot less significant.
Yep. And, you know, the uncomfortable truth, I think, is that Celtic could buy this league tomorrow if they wanted to. You know, that's how much money we have in the bank. There is no point in disseminating the men's and women's teams. The money all goes to the same bank account. And that money could be used to buy this league. It could be used to compete for free agents that we see go to Rangers and City. City are very, very, very good at picking up very talented end of contracts. A lot of the time, internationalists. You know, they've been appearing in the Champions League, so they have a great name in women's football. Rangers seem to be very good at using their name to pick up good free agents again as well. Celtic just don't seem to do it at the same level. Mm-hmm. We've been lucky or fortunate to have great, you know, analysts or whoever's made some signings that have really paid off for us.
I think just to interrupt you, that I think part of the issue is that it's Fran and David and the team who are doing all the scouting, who are like, they don't have any time off over the summer at all. They're like straight into like having to do that, and on a consistent basis across the season, to make sure that they know who they're going. Like, even the allocation of someone whose specific role it was to take some of that off their hands, who knows mm-hmm. how they want to play, you know, that would make a massive difference. Sorry, so you were praising some of the signings we've made, because I do think they deserve credit for that. I totally agree with you. But I think it is about, you know, maybe some of it is about you with just time as much as money.
Yeah, and there's some obvious ones there that we miss out on that you have to wonder why. I mean, why didn't we sign Georgia Timms in the summer? Fine if she didn't want to come, but I don't see that necessarily happening at this level. There's a lot of players like that you want to at least hear us in for, and I get that, you know, we are the gossip train of Celtic Women. You know, I mean, there's not a transfer war room at the Daily Record pouring over potential rumours for who's coming to Celtic. So we don't hear a lot about stuff. We don't hear about a lot of stuff, but you want to feel like, I mean, as Ken said, it's kind of embarrassing that it's evident, like yeah. you said, we're the third in line when we are by a mile the richest club. We are by a mile. You know, we have a great fan base that wants to commit to this team, but until Celtic start to take it seriously, it's tough to convince the average fan to.
Yeah, I think it's also worth mentioning, just in terms of that resource bit with the time and everything, how much, I'm not saying it's easy to be a scout in men's football, far from it. All I'm saying is that, you know, the extra effort it takes to be able to get access to go and find out about players in other leagues, playing in other countries, playing down in England, to be able to see enough proper footage, to be able to get to games, to be able to do all the stuff that allows you to understand that a player might A, be good enough, and B, suitable to fit into your plans for whatever your squad wants to do this next season. That's a huge amount of work in the women's game that, you know, the access to that is so much easier in the men's game.
Yeah, I mean, even just getting to watch games back sometimes can be an absolute disaster. Mm-hmm. So the idea of scouting a player efficiently and fully is something that requires a full-time role. Or, you know, I don't know if people work on, I don't know, some sort of agency basis, or you get scouts who you can kind of bring in for certain mm-hmm. projects, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And in certain regions, obviously, we must have had some eyes on China somehow to have brought in two Shens.
Yeah.
You know, there's something there. But yeah, it's more that kind of obvious nature of us not competing, not being first choice for a player to come up here and play, because we're not investing as much. And that must be quite evident. And maybe players who have been approached don't see the potential growth in the women's team either. You know, maybe the teams like Hearts and Rangers and City have shown a bit of a stronger commitment to growing the women's teams, mm-hmm. and that's where you want to go play.
Yeah, I think that Fran and the coaching staff have to do so much of the legwork, and also the senior players as well are probably doing a lot of that in terms of, you know, being able to encourage, you know, talk to potential players coming in and get them to come. I think the point about, like, a lot of what we're saying, and a lot of what we always say, is a lot of guesswork, a lot of deliberation, a lot of kind of what's going on. I think that's just the nature of the women's game right now as well, is that it just all seems to be sort of shrouded in mystery so much of the time. You don't get, like you said, we are the people gossiping about it and talking about it. Like, yeah. there's kind of, apart from going straight to the club or knowing families of players or whatever it is, like having very direct contacts, you're not going to necessarily kind of hear on the grapevine as much, which I do think is interesting. And just, sorry, on another point about, I know I'm kind of going all over the place, but it keeps sparking little things in my brain about the resource bit. You know, I don't know what the scouting setup is at Glasgow City and Rangers, but I do, for example, Rangers have got a person whose job is, I think, you know, I think we've mentioned this before, women's team manager. It won't be manager, because obviously Joe Potter is the manager, but it's like that one person's role is to manage everything across the women's team, to make sure that everything is joined up, to make sure the right people are speaking to the right people. We don't have anyone like that who's been given not just a role to do that, but authority to do that, because that's where mm-hmm. it comes. We've got lots of people, like you said, who are working super hard behind the scenes and do an amazing job, but they're not being given the authority to kind of actually take charge and like manage some of the stuff that should be taken off the hands of some of the staff who frankly won't be being paid enough, or the coaching staff and the players who also aren't being paid enough but have other things to do.
Yeah, and we've also seen, you know, from job roles that have gone up, it's always women's and B team. It's women's and B team. You're a women's and B team marketing exec. You're a women's and B team.
This old chestnut, I like it.
Whatever. And, you know, the B team are an amateur football side that play in the lowest division in Scotland or something nonsense like that. They are not in the same importance level to me as the women's team. And I even think from a financial standpoint, from a football development standpoint, I don't know how you can argue that the B team is a kind of profitable endeavour in its current state, and the women's first team isn't. Mm-hmm. And I find it all quite embarrassing when we conflate the two. And that's the only thing I don't like about the Barrowfield thing, is this, it's kind of the B team's domain and the women can play there. That's what it feels like.
Yeah. Just on that, you know, giving enough resource, and we've already talked about where we might need to strengthen and talked about maybe bringing in more attacking options. Chris had asked, do you think we need another striker, number 10 in January? Do you think Fran will get the money to bring them in?
I mean, no on the money front.
No.
But yes, we do. And it'll be a case of, like you say, Fran and David and the team behind the scenes trying to find somebody who can come in and who's happy to come in and who can fit in. And there's a lot of hoops to jump through to come in January, particularly in the women's game. But we definitely need some cover there, and we need somebody to compete. So, yes.
Kind of linking in a little bit to, I guess it comes back to the transparency bit as well, is Brian has asked, Brian also asked about playing at Barrowfield, which we've talked about, but also injury updates. Players disappear from the squad with no explanation given.
Absolutely.
This is something that drives us bananas, I think, constantly. Like, we probably are privy to a bit more information. If we attend the press conferences, I always ask, what's the injury situation? And to be fair, Fran, when he gets asked the question in a situation like that, he's really open about it and he tells you exactly what the situation is. But it means that, you know, I can't always get to press conferences. I've got other work that I need to do, and sometimes they're scheduled in the middle of the day when I've got meetings or whatever. But you don't get that. It doesn't feel like it would be that hard to just tell us like they do across the rest of the game.
Yeah, have semi-consistent, semi-regular updates. You know, how's Lucy Ashworth-Clifford? How's her recovery going? How is Hannah Kerner? Because I've not heard from her or seen her. You know, we see Luana at the games. But obviously, Luana is somebody that's come all the way over here to play for us, had a really bad injury straight away. It's probably a little more isolated over here and is much more involved with the squad. Whereas I'd imagine somebody like Lucy, who's now back with the squad, when she was at the worst of her injury, was maybe away from Glasgow, was maybe closer to her family.
Uh-huh.
And we do just lose track of these players. And these are players who, as fans, were waiting to see again, were concerned for their injuries as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to be able to see what the squad looks like. What's the makeup of the squad? We're getting asked, you know, who do we need to sign? Where do we need to strengthen? Maybe we need a right back because Hannah Kerner's not coming back.
Well, I was just about to mention Hannah Kerner is a great example of this. We haven't physically seen her like around the squad in playing games. I mean, when they're playing games, she's not playing. She's got a really bad injury. You know, that's not. Did you just do a thumbs up at me?
No, what the hell was that?
Okay, sorry to interrupt this broadcast, but Zoom is doing a random thumbs up at me. Maybe it's just being encouraging and saying you're doing a good job. Yeah. Keep going. But Hannah Kerner, you know, what's going on there? You know, we had that. Do you remember we signed Molly Plasman?
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. I've never even seen a picture of that woman.
I've done some digging around. It doesn't look like she's ever been back in Glasgow. I've made the assumption she's not going to be our player anymore. But there's no kind of post going, you know, no. Due to her injury and life circumstances, etc. Molly's going to move on. We wish her all the best, blah, blah, blah. It's just weird. And you see other clubs doing it, you know, giving, you know, that some of the maybe bigger clubs in the WSL, for example, will give like a proper injury update where they'll say this person, this person, this person. But yeah, I mean, that right wing back problem, if we can call it that, you know, Hannah Kerner is a crucial piece of that puzzle and we just don't know what's going on.
It's at its core, it's unprofessional. It's insane to have a professional football club who can't communicate with the fans the status of its players. Uh-huh. It's ridiculous. And it's something so easy to fix, you know, and I'd love to know the reasons why we can't get a bit more transparency about where players are. It's not some sort of breach of privacy to say somebody's got a broken leg or somebody doesn't play for us anymore.
Yeah.
We just don't seem to get that.
Yeah. I think the more that we're talking about this as well and thinking about the scouting issue, the injury issue, the communications issue, the promotions issue, the all of this stuff, like at the end of the day, it's about putting resource in on the pitch and off the pitch. Like there's probably one of the very real reasons we don't get those injury updates. And this is me completely spitballing. I don't know, but like it's not anyone's job. So because it's not anyone's job, no one's doing it because everyone's run off their feet. They're busy. They're doing their jobs, whatever. No one's bothering and going, who's doing the injury update? Who's telling, you know, which would be part of the comms, but as we've discussed, the comms are not far from ideal and hopefully are going to improve. We call for them to improve.
it's afterthought. That's what it is. You know, it's the club's just an afterthought, the women's team.
Yeah.
And until that changes, everything will be kind of on the back foot.
Yes. On a positive note, I'm going to finish here. And again, apologies if we haven't got around to your question. We might save some of them for next week as well. But one of the areas that the club has been better is including the women's team in the Christmas advert, and it's just about time for the Christmas advert to be released. And Andrew has asked, what role for the girls and who will star in the Christmas advert this year? It's a nice one to end on.
I think Kitla Fersky has been very media friendly.
Yeah
she's attends everything
she's
she
nailed
can
on, isn't she?
Yeah, she's very smiley. She goes to all the big things. She's, you know, shown some commitment to the club. So I feel like Kitla Fersky's pretty nailed on. Caitlin Hayes, 1,000,000%.
Yeah.
You're seeing Caitlin Hayes merch at the games now.
Yeah.
Something headband related, perhaps Rudolph ears, I don't know. I'm not the marketing person. But those two, 100%. And I feel like Shen has always been involved.
Shen, yeah. What about Lou? I think we might see Lou this year.
We'll see the two of them in some sort of double act because they did that interview where it was the two of them and that went down so well. I feel like they have to write that.
I feel like Lou's quite fun and she quite likes getting dressed up and she might be quite up for it, especially now that her English is a bit better and she's got a bit more confidence. I'd like that. She's my wild card pick for the Christmas advert, but you can't not have Caitlin and you probably can't not have Kelly and you probably can't not have Kit as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I'd like to see Cav involved in some sort of aggressive Christmas post.
Some kind of like subtle dig to her club of last season.
Yes, potentially.
Would be amazing. This has been really fun. It's nice sometimes just to shoot the breeze about this stuff, isn't it, Lorenzo? I hope we've done justice to your questions. If there's anything doubt remaining, you know, there's a lot of stuff that we also don't know, like we said, because sometimes it's hard to find this stuff out. But I think that keep asking the questions, keep pressuring the club, keep trying to make everything better, and it will be. And I'm happy because I've just been reminded that the Christmas effort's out any minute now, which is always one of my favourite things of the year. So that's good. Lorenzo, thank you very much.
No, thank you, Claire. Always a pleasure. And like I say, I think the best thing about the questions is how I think with Celtic right now as well, without the men's team, a lot of things can be very divisive and there's a lot of negative things at the club, but there's a lot of negative things about the women's team, but we're all on the same page. I think as a fan base, those of us that support the women's team and want to see it do well have a lot of shared goals, there's a lot of frustration, but it's all pointed in quite a positive direction, and everyone's been really, really good, I think, about pushing the women's team on. And as I say, I think the best way to do that would be to get the ground sorted so that we can kind of drag this team forward as a group, as a fan group, because that's who the responsibility is always going to be on, I think.
Yeah.
I don't see the club changing that.
Exactly. Onwards and upwards, I think a ground is the next thing. And I think when you say, I think everyone's on the same page about wanting to just for things to go onwards and upwards, I think we also talk for the players and the coaching staff and everyone who are actually physically involved in this. When we say the club, we don't mean them, like, obviously.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's been really good. Thank you very much again for sending in the questions. We will be back next week to talk about, we've got a game against Dundee United on Sunday. For anyone who hasn't noticed, it has been changed, the time. It was at 4 o'clock. It's now at 12:30, which has completely screwed up my fun day out in Dundee that I was going to have with my mum beforehand. But that's fine. So if you're going to Dundee, it's, I think, 12:30 kickoff now, but check. And I'm pretty sure it's Pay on the Gate. I will be tweeting about it later in the week. And then we'll be talking about that and also previewing the big game against Glasgow City, which is coming up next Friday. Tickets already on sale. We need lots and lots of people there shouting, and we need to win that one. So yeah, lots to come up. Nice to have, we haven't even touched on the international appearances, but that's fine. Maybe we can talk about that next week as well. Lorenzo, thank you.
Thank you.
He has been Lorenzo Pacitti. I've been Claire Wilde, and this has been the Celtic Women's Football Show.